Welcome to the next in our series of IWA debates in partnership with Cardiff University. I'm Auriel Miller, the director of the IWA, and I've met, I think, most but not all of you, so I hope you'll have a chance to stay around afterwards and have a chat and a drink as well. One of the most important parts of our purpose as the IWA is to be a platform for constructive debate, which will help make Wales better. So we're very pleased to be holding this particularly timely event this evening. Cardiff and Swansea city regions are seen as key to the successful economic future of Wales, but there are to be no elected mayors at their helm. In contrast, there are currently 17 directly elected mayors in England and none in Wales. Successful governance of the city regions could bring maximum impact from the investment, but a recent petition failed to get enough votes to support a referendum for a mayor in Cardiff. Clearly, these governance issues are ones that need to be debated and discussed before we get too far down the road or even up the metro. We know it's a contentious issue and that people across Wales have some very different views, even of the relevance of this debate at all. As usual, we'll be sharing a note of this debate with our members who can't be here this evening, as well as live tweeting discussions from this evening too. It's part of our ongoing engagement with our 900 plus members across the country and with the 13,000 people who follow us on Twitter and the 90,000 who visit our website each year. Our very grateful thanks to Cardiff University for partnering with us on this event, the second in this year's series, and of course to our friends at Evershed Sutherland for hosting us again. We much appreciate your support. And finally, thank you for coming. As a small charity, should I say that again? As a small charity, we rely heavily on the support of our members. If you enjoy this evening and you're not already a member of the IWA, do please think about joining us. Just visit our website, iwa.wales, to do so. It costs less than a cup of coffee a week. And I'm going to now hand over to our chair for the evening, Sean Berry, business editor of Wales Online and the Western Mail. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Auriel, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And welcome to this panel discussion on the subject matter of whether city regions, although we don't have formally constituted city regions, should have elected mayors in Wales. As Auriel has just alluded to, there are currently 17 elected mayors in England, and in May there will be another series of votes for elected mayors for new combined authorities as part of the city deal process and devolution process in England. But just like rail electrification, we currently don't have any directed elected mayors here in Wales. But that doesn't say there hasn't been efforts to do so in the past. Some of you might recall the referendum for elected mayor for Ceredigion back in 2004 was rejected by a majority of 9,000. And supporters of elected mayor for Cardiff, which required a signed petition from 10% of the electorate, or just under 25,000 people, far higher than the requirement in England for a referendum, didn't get the required support last year. Now, if you had read the Welsh Government's white paper on reorganisation of local government in Wales, yes, another consultation, you will not find any reference to elected mayors. And rather than city regional bodies with statutory powers in key areas such as planning and economic development, it talks of pooling resources under joint committee governance arrangements, although there would be a requirement for those on those committees representing local authorities to act and think in a regional way. So would directly elected mayors, perhaps based on the evolving, slowly evolving Cardiff Capital and Swansea Bay city regions, and possibly for North Wales and Mid Wales too, re-energise interest in local democracy, with mayors acting as powerful ambassadors in promoting Wales and its four regions to the world? And would it result in better delivery of public services against the backdrop of an increasingly challenging funding climate? Or could there be inherent dangers, despite levels of scrutiny, in investing so much power in the hands of one individual? Well, that will be the discussion tonight, and I'm delighted to introduce our distinguished panel, starting on my left with Professor Russell Deacon. Russell is the visiting professor in governance and political history at the University of South Wales. He has extensive knowledge on devolved government across the UK, and is an expert on Welsh political history and the Liberal Party in particular. His various roles include being chair of the Lloyd George Society, and no doubt the UK's only Welsh Prime Minister would have some interesting views on elected mayors for Wales if alive today. So welcome to you, Russell. Next to Russell, we have Simon Cook from across the bridge in Bristol. Now, Simon has first-hand experience of the benefits and challenges of elected mayors, having been the assistant mayor to Bristol's first elected mayor in George Ferguson, who is well known to the Institute of Welsh Affairs as an independent. A Liberal Democrat, Simon was first elected to Bristol Council in 1999 and is a former leader of the city authority for a small period of time. I think it was about 6 months, wasn't it, Simon? He spent 20 years working as an actor in theatre, film and television, and he has appeared, if you're interested in soap operas, in numerous programmes on our national TV, including Family Affairs, EastEnders, Doctors and Casualty. Well, I'm assuming that was before Casualty moved from Bristol to Wales, Simon. He is also creative director of the Pod Factory. So welcome to you, Simon. And we also have then, further on, Andrew Carter. Andrew is Deputy Chief Executive at Centre for Cities and has overall responsibility for its research and policy programme. Centre for Cities' main goal is to understand how and why economic growth and change takes place in UK cities, and it produces reports to help cities improve their performance. He has more than 20 years' experience working on urban economic policy issues, as well as reviewing urban development strategies in US cities such as Boston, Chicago, Washington, DC, and New York. And finally, our final panelist this evening is Julie Morgan, no stranger to you, many of you here this evening. Julie is the current Welsh Assembly member for Cardiff North. She was also the MP for the Westminster constituency of Cardiff North from 1997 to 2010. She cut her political teeth first as a councillor for South Glamorgan County Council and then as a Cardiff councillor. She is a member of the Unite Union and was a founding member of the Welsh Refugee Council and Women's Arts Association. So, let's start off with you, Julie, if I may. Do you think there would be any merit in city regions or cities in Wales adopting a direct elected mayor approach to democracy as they do in many English regions and cities?
No, I don't. I do not see the necessity for elected mayors of cities or of the city region. I'm sure you all saw the big event on March the 1st with the 10 local authority leaders sitting together, 9 Labour, 1 Conservative, 9 men and 1 woman, sadly, bearing in mind it's International Women's Day tomorrow, and wearing the daffodils and signing the deal. And I really did feel that was an example of collaboration, an example of bodies working together. I think it's taken quite a long time to get to that point. And I think that what we need to do is build on that strength of collaboration and the leadership that those local authorities have shown. Because I do believe that they have shown leadership, because in politics, as you know, a lot of it is about egos. And in order to work together in that collaborative sort of way, you have to put aside the egos. And I believe that's what they have done. And I think the best way is to build on that collaboration moving forward. I do think that there is not a public appetite for mayors in Wales. The chair has already alluded to the fact that the only vote that actually happened was in Ceredigion, which was heavily defeated. And the Cardiff attempt failed because of lack of public support. So I don't think there is that sort of wish in Wales to have another elected layer, which all the complications that bill brings. I also believe it does concentrate a lot of power in one person's hands without the checks and balances that are often available in other situations. So my view is that we do not need that at this time, and I think that we will move forward in this collaborative way without the complications of having an elected mayor imposed, because I don't think it's something that people want in Wales.
Okay, well, thank you, Julie, for that opening remark. Andrew, your position?
Yes, so my position is I think that the city region should have a directly elected mayor. But before I give you a sense as to why, I think we need to be clear. We've had some numbers bandied around. We only have one city region mayor in the UK, and that's Greater London's mayor. Sadiq Khan is the only city region mayor. There are other mayors of local authorities or of certain boroughs, of certain places, but we only have one City Region Mayor. And as I understand it, the debate tonight is not about whether Cardiff Council should have, or Cardiff itself should have, a direct elected mayor, it's whether the City Region should have a direct elected mayor. And I think that's an important distinction to make. So I'm in favour of it, and I think, but maybe not yet. So in some regards, I kind of agree with Julie that when we look at what makes city regions and their the way that they work successful, I think to be successful, they need robust and relatively mature arrangements of the individual places that make up the city region. That's not only the politicians, that's also the business community, that's the civic institutions, universities, etc., and the voluntary sector as well. So we need an underlying sort of infrastructure of positive, robust relationships that operate there. And when we look at, Julie's alluded to it, when we look at Cardiff, we look at Swansea, I think, you know, when we, I think though you can see those relationships emerging, but maybe they've got further to go. They need to bed down, they need to become more mature over time, and then I think we could begin to think about the directly elected mayors. And when we think about Greater Manchester, we think about Greater Liverpool or Merseyside, whatever you want to call it. And in the sense, the question is, they are going for directly elected city region mayors in May, in a couple of months' time. But they weren't ready 5 years ago. They certainly weren't ready 10 years ago. In a sense, the hard yards of those leaders coming together to think about how they organise themselves, how they respond to the challenges that their city regions have, was a work in progress. They needed to think about how all that worked. Now is the time, I think, for directly elected mayors of those places, in part because we want them to have a big mandate over economy-related matters. We want them to have a mandate over strategic transport, over strategic housing, in Manchester's case, over how health and social care are integrated. They seem to be large service areas that having a more direct democratic oversight over seems to be warranted. So my position is yes, I think we would want to get to them, but maybe not quite yet.
Okay, thank you. Now, some of you have first had experience of being around a cabinet table, maybe it was dominated by George Ferguson, in Bristol, but what's your position? Yes, maybe the city regions haven't evolved into functioning forms yet, but the idea of elective mayors for a Cardiff Capital Region should cover the 10 local authorities of South East Wales, maybe one for Swansea Bay, which covers 4 local authorities, North Wales perhaps and Mid Wales. What would your be your take on that?
Well, my experience is of a city which moved from a leader and cabinet system to a mayor, and where I think the experience of that shift has been very mixed. But what you have to understand is that a directly elected mayor in a city has a lot more power than a strategic metro mayor will have. For instance, when we elect the metro mayor for the west of England in May, the metro mayor will have strategic overview of transport, housing, business development, and skills, and skills 16 to 19, so post 16. And if you read the devolution agreement, which was actually signed by 4 authorities, but then one dropped out, so we've got a combined authority of 3 authorities, it is a political document. It is a diplomatic document par excellence. It's kind of vague to the nth degree in places, really about how much power the mayor is going to have. And I see this very much as an evolving position. But so that, you know, with a strong personality, with good diplomatic skills, with a very good team, with someone who knows Westminster and Whitehall, who knows how to go there and negotiate new deals, I think it could become very influential. But it is not the same as the experience that I went through, which is I was the last leader of Bristol City Council and handed over power to George. And George was an independent. He was very wary of the party system. So he had a multi-party cabinet, but he didn't give us any power. The legislation offered him the opportunity to make all the decisions themselves. And if you do that, the effect on the officer corps is absolutely extraordinary. That's the guy who's in charge. Forget all these councillors. He's in charge. And you know, I used to go to my portfolio briefings, and the paperwork I was given was always headed by, this is not a decision-making meeting. So, you know, and you got to the sort of point where you'd be walking down a corridor in City Hall and an officer would stop you and say, oh, I really must brief you on so-and-so. It's been to George and I must just bring you up to date. Hmm. And if that had happened under a leader and cabinet system, you know, there would have been hell to pay from the leader if it had not gone to the cabinet member first. So I think we, and George didn't really, I'm not knocking him for it, because, you know, parties don't like independence with power. They really don't. And, you know, they were out to make life difficult for him. And so he was very wary about trusting us as his cabinet. And I think he didn't really do that until the last year, where, you know, we began to take more, have more influence, probably. But what, and I think probably what you have the same thing in Wales, but what we have in the west of England, which will be handed over to the Metro Mayor, is the West of England Partnership, which of course is still between four authorities, including North Somerset, which deals with transport and spatial strategy. And that will sort of be handed over to the Metro Mayor with North Somerset not there, but having to be included, because if you want a rapid transit system for the airport, for instance, you've got it goes through North Somerset. So, and already the West of England Partnership has initiated the Portishead, opening up the Portishead to Bristol line as a commuter route. That's North Somerset. So you've got to have meetings with them, and then you've got to have combined authority meetings. So the whole thing is going to be very kind of experimental.
Yeah.
But look, what I would say is that the great thing George did for Bristol was take some decisions which the council had shied away from for years. He sold the city across the world in a way that had never been done before, and marketed the city. And, you know, that was brilliant. And if a metro mayor or a city region mayor can actually bring inward investment because they're good at flogging what you do well across the world, and you've got one person who's going around, and, you know, and foreign leaders and important influential people, you know, do take note of somebody who's in charge.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to Guangzhou, for instance, huge city we're twinned with in China, third city of China. And I went as Lord Mayor. No power whatsoever, ceremonial figure. They thought I was God. They thought I was Bristol, you know, but I wasn't. And so I had to go back to the leader and say, oh, but if you've got somebody who is in charge, who does have executive power, that can be very powerful. So I'm sort of on the fence. I'm not saying no, I'm not saying yes. Mm. And a lot of my experience in Bristol, it makes me very wary about where, you know, the full executive power be invested in one person. But it does have its plus points, and it's something I think which we will see how the ones to be elected in May will evolve, and, mm-hmm. and maybe you need to wait a bit and take a decision later on when we've made lots of mistakes. I don't know.
Okay, well, thank you, Simon.
Russell, your position.
Well, my position is similar to Julie's in that I'm against an elected mayor. The reasons why are kind of connected up a bit with what Simon is. It's this kind of wish we have for like a benign dictator that will come in and effectively, you know, restore us from the problems that we've got. And what we have a tendency to do is to look around the world, find the examples of where the elected mayor has been the most effective and say, that's it, without looking at the other examples. And they tend to be international cities, New York, Paris, where you've got, you know, huge advantages in the first place. Now, I look back historically to Wales when Cardiff was a world-leading city. Did it have an elected mayor then? No, it didn't have an elected mayor. It had a city or a town council, but the difference was is that the business in those days, the businesses very much controlled the council. And it was they that determined. That was also a day when there were two votes, because business people could vote twice, so plurality voting. So there was a dominance for business, and therefore they constructed everything on an economic basis. Now, often the side effects was for social welfare and general population, it wasn't so good. But what I see then is now there's been kind of a reversal where business has almost been removed from that process. So it's gone round. So what I see is, no, I wouldn't want an elected mayor, but I don't think the existing system is good enough either. That needs to be reformed, and it needs to be reformed so it brings business people back in more effectively so that they can engage with the political process as well. If you look back to where South Wales was the most successful, it was driven often behind these business entrepreneurs. Now, I did a similar debate last year with Newport Civic Society, and before that debate, I did ask around various people that were under elected mayors across England to see what their experience was, and on the negatives they came back with is there's a dominance of personality politics, so the public and the media concentrate on that over issues. It becomes done on personality politics. We've seen that particularly the case in London, that elected mayors were difficult to remove once they were in. So if they were proved ineffective once they were in, they were also very difficult to get out. The councillors on there, I think Simon's come across this as well, found it difficult to hold the mayors to account. They were easily sidestepped and scrutiny became ineffective. And also that it was a tendency again for career politicians that had previously been, you know, council leaders or in various other posts to take those roles of elected mayors. So it was just a progression of those. So that kind of desire as well that people have to bring in an independent figure or someone that's connected with business in reality doesn't work or doesn't work on a sustained basis. It goes back. So what we have to look then is similar to, if we look at the police commissioners in Wales, that is a likelihood that that would be the repeated for the elected mayors. So you would have those political parties. And what we saw in Wales in the first election is we saw there were two independents got through. And in the second elections, we went back to political parties again and the dominance of those. My remaining concern is that if you do get an independent in, we are living in an era now where it's populists. So a strong populist will come in, promise all sorts of things that are not necessarily realistic, get elected, and then we have to deal with the consequences of that. If you want a Donald Trump style politician as the elected mayor, at the moment the electorate in the mood often to vote them in. So you've also got to bear that into mind. That is democracy, but then you have to live with that as well.
Okay, well thank you for those opening remarks. Russell, you talked about populist Trump style elected mayors and not being accountable and trying to create their own agenda and not working in a collaborative way with other parties, which presumably will have to form part of cabinets, but it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, if you had an independent who was enlightened, brought in the best talent from the other parties to deliver a consensual economic strategy, there's a flip side to your argument that it can actually be a force for good and it could actually engage people from different parties who wouldn't have much of a chance to have any direct control or a cabinet seat to work together for the betterment of cities.
That's correct, but that's what I was saying. What we do is we pick up our kind of fantasy one, what our mayor would be. That would be our ideal Lord Mayor, elected mayor, but not necessarily the reality. Just like probably in the last election, many people in the audience were thinking, well, Hillary Clinton's going to be the president of the United States. She's got all the characteristics from it. She comes across best in all the debates. It's quite obvious that she's going to be the one that's elected. And then, of course, the reality is that the voters deliver you somebody else.
Yeah, I guess an independent having a policy of building a wall around Newport in the Cardiff, the city region might not go
build a new dike,
too well.
An office dike.
Julie, you talked about collaboration as your approach for the Cardiff Capital Region, but isn't there a sense of frustration with the Welsh Government? I mean, Edwina talked about city regions and engaging Elizabeth Hayward to carry out a report into this, and I remember her conclusion was that if the Welsh economy wants to move at the bottom of the UK economic competitiveness ladder, it needed to embrace city regions. Cities were economic drivers, and the hinterlands could benefit from that. Then we set up something called, Roger Lewis was chairman of the City Region Advisory Panel, had a final report, but it didn't really pack any significant punches in terms of creating a local authority with statutory powers. There's now a transitional board. But you think the Welsh Government should play a role in this? The white paper, we had Leighton's reorganisation of local government, which
came and went. We had the Williams Commission on boundaries based on health boards, which has come and gone. The white paper is now for consultation. Don't we need leadership from the Welsh Government to say, no, no, we agree with devolution within Wales. Let's create fully functioning city regions around Swansea and Cardiff to start with strategic powers over economic development planning. And, you know, maybe acting towards an overarching economic strategy from the Welsh Government, but this is the evolution of devolution. You give power up to cities and their hinterlands, and if a result of that is elected mayor, so be it. Do you think that the Welsh Government are too obsessed with controlling and centralising control? They just do not want to give the reins on such powers to fully functioning city regions.
I agree that it's taken some time to get to where we are, and it's taken a considerable number of reports, which you've been through. But I think that to actually have arrived at a situation where the local authorities have agreed between themselves to sign this deal and to move forward, hopefully to some of the ways that you suggest, I think is an achievement. And the white paper, and certainly this in the white paper, there's no mention of mayors in the white paper. And I don't really think that the Welsh Government sees mayors as figuring in these proposals. And I think that there is a real wish to devolve power. But I think that it would be a big mistake to try to talk about bringing in elected mayors. I mean, the body itself is to review its governance. I mean, that's part of what it's committed to. So that renewal will be there. But I also think it's very important to remember that we've got these elected mayors that, you know, others have referred to in Manchester coming up and Liverpool and other places. But that is what Osborne said they had to have as a result of devolving the powers. And for example, in Manchester itself, I think Manchester City had voted against having a mayor, I believe. And I think that...
For the local authority
itself. But the city region mayor was imposed, and that's what the pattern has been, which is quite a change of policy for the Conservatives, because they'd always insisted on referendums before you had a mayor. So the policy has been mixed generally throughout the UK, but I think that we are getting there in Wales.
Okay. Andrew, I guess as an organisation that promotes the economic diversity and strength of cities outside of London, would you, theoretical question, be hung up by boundaries on metro mayors? So, George Ferguson, for example, talked about the Great Western Partnership, and maybe we should see ourselves as a Western Britain economic entity, Bristol and Cardiff working together, Newport, Swansea, bit of blue sky thinking, but if you see any reason, and we're just at the start of the metro mayor situation in England, and you said let's wait and see what happens before we talk about electric metro mayors for Cardiff. But could you see the potential of mayors representing parts of the UK that go beyond devolved boundaries, and to see an economic entity that there are those collaborations and
you could
potentials of scale?
You most definitely could. I think the artificial boundaries in that sense between, let's say, Wales and England at the margins is probably, you know, doesn't tell you very much other than, you know, historical reasons as to why the boundaries are where they are. But the principal organising thought is to think about the geography of everyday life. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about the geography of everyday life, then you get towards Cardiff City Region as a pretty good proxy for the geography of everyday life. If you look about how people are moving across that area on, you know, travel to work, travel to services and all the rest of it. You think about how the housing market works across that area. That's not a bad proxy. If you then attach that to the sorts of skills or the sorts of services that we're offering these metro mayors, they are primarily, as has already been said, issues around transport. I fail to understand how we can resolve Cardiff City Region transport at the local authority by local authority by local authority by local authority. We certainly can't do skills, right? We certainly can't think about how we invest in skills to improve people living in Blaenau Gwent or in Torvine or up in Merthyr Tydfil without ever having a sense as to how the travel to work patterns for those that are acquiring those skills works. And it certainly doesn't work at the Merthyr Tydfil level. So that's kind of, you know, obsolete in that respect. So when we think about, you know, the range of policies that we're talking about, they're not a bad proxy for the geographies of everyday life, which is what the kind of economy functions over. That gets you pretty close to city regions in this place. Now, it doesn't mean that Cardiff might not want to do something strategic through the Great Western X.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, you don't need formal arrangements. You just need to make that happen, right? That's different from saying, who has a say over the buses at the metro level? Who has a say over the land use planning system at the metro? Who's going to think about where we put housing in the area? And do we want some form of direct accountability or not over those sorts of decisions? It seems to me that having ward councillors who maybe or may not be leaders, who may be voted in by half a dozen or a thousand or so people, making decisions for 1.5 million people, many of which are in separate local authorities, seems to me, I don't know, to be a slightly imperfect way of having accountability and transparency for those sorts of decisions. You can decide otherwise. That feels to me to be an important thing that we need to think about.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. So, I mean, Bristol was a trailblazer for city elected mayors. You were in that cabinet with George. I mean, you touched on this earlier. I mean, on the positive ledger, the things that George did for the city. Just interested in how alienated the other political parties felt towards the end, and also the elephants in the room, the actual officials who do the day-to-day operational heavy lifting at the direction, whether it's local authorities in Wales or George as the mayor. Well, what was that?
I think there was a shift of power to the officer corps.
Yeah.
And I think that's been now manifested by the fact that there is a budget crisis in the city, and that it appears that senior officers hid financial difficulty from the mayor and cabinet. And there's now going to be an independent investigation into that. And I can see how that happened. And I guess the two senior strategic officers that were primarily responsible for that have now gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that that was partly a product of the fact that, you know, that a lot of power had transferred to SLT, the Strategic Leadership Team, and they ran large sections of the council. They kept the mayor happy, and the council itself and a large part of the cabinet were marginalised, and that is very much a danger. But, you know, I do take your point, for instance. In the west of England, we have never had an integrated transport authority. And transport is chaotic. You know, I mean, I was in a cab going to Temple Meads tonight, and it was just appalling. From 4 o'clock onwards, it just, you know. And anyone, frankly, who can go in, use the powers that are being devolved, and sort that, yeah, nobody wants another layer of government. But you sort the transport problem. You build some more houses, you'll be right up there in popularity terms. Electorates are fickle, you know. So I'm not saying that, you know, what I'm trying to outline is I think there are dangers with power being given to people without serious checks and balances. And I think the legislation that created the mayoralty we have was seriously flawed. But, you know, there are undoubted benefits. I mean, we sold the Port of Bristol, for instance, its freehold. Now, that would have never got through. I tried to get it through. When I was leader of the council, tried to get my cabinet to do it, they wouldn't. But if the Port of Bristol is to build a deep sea facility, it needs the freehold. If you're going to go and borrow 600 million quid from a sovereign wealth fund, you need the freehold. Otherwise, you're not going to get it, you know. But there was always this feeling, oh, no, there's these businessmen there trying to pull the wool over our eyes, you know. George saw the advantages, he charged a high price for it, he got it, and he sold it. And that was completely against the grain of council and absolutely the right thing to do. So, you know, it's one thing and the other.
Sure, just to come back, I don't disagree with what Simon said, but this is why it is very important to distinguish between what essentially Simon's been talking about, which is a local authority mayor, which is a significantly powerful body or individual because of the nature of the thing that they are running. We are not, as far as I understand it, not talking about that tonight. We're talking about Met or mayor. So, you know, this
but it could evolve into that.
Well,
they could.
They could not. The fear of the despot, which is, you know, what you hear, is a straw man argument given where we are at the minute. I mean, in some respects, it's the reverse. The fear is that the Metro mayors we're going to have in Greater Manchester or Greater Liverpool, et cetera, won't be sufficiently powerful in order to enact some of the tougher decisions that they're probably needing to make. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many checks and balances in the system. In a sense, they will have to get 2/3 majority from the 10 leaders in Greater Manchester, 8 of which are Labour, right, in order to get there anything through. So this fear that they will run amok is mistaken, and it's mistaken for a bunch of reasons. But so that's why we have to be very clear about what model we're really talking about. Otherwise, we'll conflate one set of experiences with a different set of experiences, and they are related, but they are different.
Okay, Julie.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's absolutely right that they are two different models and different consequences as to how they operate. But the important similarity, which means that we have to talk about it because to some extent that's our only experience, is the fact that they are directly elected, that one person does have, or, you know, does have the votes. And yeah. I think that that is very...
Is that a bad thing as
no,
a politician?
No, I'm not. I think
can't
it's a good...
argue that there's a bad thing for people to be elected, right?
I think it's a good thing for people to be elected. But in terms of the fact that a mayor, a directly elected mayor, whether it's for a city or a region, have the similar ways of being, you know, of being voted there. And somebody, an individual, is voted in that sort of way, and our leaders are not normally voted for in that sort of way, because obviously the in the councils, the Labour group chooses the leader who becomes the leader, and in the Welsh Government, you know, that's what happens within the parties. And I think that is a way that has more checks and balances. But it's those are the similarities, and I mean, and that's why we keep referring to it, isn't it?
Okay, well, thank you. Well, I guess the distinction between a city and a metro mayor and some of the checks and balances in Greater Manchester. But Russell, do you want to interject
there?
Yeah,
I just want to say, we've had, you know, the London mayor, which is a city, where I draw those exact examples from, which was dominance of personality politics, difficult to remove, difficult to hold to account, and career politicians. And I mean, they've been going for nearly 20 years. So that is an example of where it's... You know, some people really like the London mayor, but there are other problems as well.
Okay, well, I think at that point, thank you very much for those contributions so far, that we will open questions to the floor. So, Jerry Holtham has a question for the panel.
I'm just wondering whether there's not room for a little constitutional innovation here. I mean,
isn't
there room for a bit of constitutional innovation here? In systems that have an elected chief executive and you have an elected legislative authority, like the United States, for example, and its constituent states, there is a separation of powers, because the powers of the two arms of government are clearly defined. It seems here that what's happened is, as you were saying, that the constitution was created for Bristol, in which that balance was absent. But does it have to be absent? Why can't one simply create a system which embodies that? If there's an advantage to having an executive, a chief executive, and I don't know whether there is or not, I don't have a view, but if there is an advantage, can't we combine it with the check and balances that would be appropriate?
Anyone pick up on Jerry's question? Innovation checks and balances.
As far as the Bristol mayor, the model of the mayor, is effectively the executive chief exec, the leader. It happens to be a politician who's directly elected, but essentially they have the ability, if they so choose, to run that authority as a chief executive. So how we then deal with that and provide checks and balances within that, I think there is more than one model in order to do that. We've already, you know, alluded to London has a particular example. I don't think that is particularly effective. I think the Assembly is not a particularly effective institution for improving the policy making process and outcomes in London. Equally, we'll have a different example or different set of arrangements in Greater Manchester and the other places, which seems to be, you know, too weighted the other way, which essentially severely constrains the ability of the mayor to make some of those bigger, tougher, more challenging decisions that probably need to be to be made where we can see differential outcomes for different bits or different parts of the city region. But I agree with you in a sense, this is, we're talking about one model. There are several models on offer that we could explore in more detail.
Okay, Mark, it's my brother. Mark's got a question. So
just
small world, Wales.
Thank you, Sean. Just a quick observation. We may well be at risk of putting the cart before the horse here. And I fall between the comments you made here. The city region or city deal was signed off, fantastic, fanfare, the 10 leaders. But we all know they've agreed not to agree any projects at this stage. Not because they didn't want to, because there's actually no executive capability on a regional footprint capable yet of actually deciding what the priorities for the region are. And whether you have a mayor or a combined authority or whatever we call it, whatever constitutional arrangement actually is acceptable, the most important thing we need is to actually start discharging our responsibilities on a strategic basis on the economic footprint of the Cardiff Capital Region around transport, on housing, on spatial planning. And so we build that capability. This is the kind of a moot conversation, really, and that's the thing that's most important. The provisions in the Wales Planning Bill and other acts are there. We need to move quickly on putting the regional executive capability in place, and then we can have the conversation about how best to hold it democratically accountable. And that's what I think is where the priority is today. I mean, maybe we'll have a mayor in 10 years' time. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a combined authority. But unless we can think at officer level, at a strategic level, and actually identify what the priorities are to advise our elected whoever, then we're not going to get anywhere. That's, for me, is the most important thing.
No,
thank you, Mark.
So I think that system needs to be set up, and I think that's the key priority, to set it up, to decide on the projects. I think that's right.
Can I say also, you need to bring in a different mindset as well, because you've got 10 authorities, and I mean, I live in Caerphilly, I work up in Blaenau Gwent, and of course they've all got the mindset of being their own body. They don't see themselves as being suburbs of Cardiff or Newport or anything like that. So unless you change the mindset, it'll never work.
And maybe you can.
Yeah, well, that's right. But you know, I see no plans to change the mindset. That's the problem.
Can I interject? And
sorry.
Hello, Councillor Susan Aylesmore, Cabinet Member, Health, Housing and Wellbeing for Cardiff. And this is a really, really interesting discussion. And I just want to throw something in the mix, because one of the things for me, being a member of the Cabinet of Cardiff, in sort of part of the discussions about the city deal, is that recognition, I think, and people may call it a sort of a female mindset, but actually Julie has talked about kind of collaboration. And I think there is truly something about the Cardiff deal, the Capital Region deal, which is about the 10 authorities recognising a governance for collaborative decision making. They're going to have to relinquish some power to gain power together. So I think Russell's right in terms of a change of mindset. I just don't think we're sort of, some of the discussion really has evolved sufficiently yet. But hopefully it will.
So is there a case of, you know, Turkey's not wanting to vote for Christmas, but local authorities want to keep control? I mean, that's the thing I raised. So the Welsh Government needs to take a lead on this. I mean, get the structures right, strategic development plans, transport, economic development in regions. And from that, my brother alluded to, then, you know, the cherry on top of the cake could be an elected mayor at some stage. So
but it needn't be.
Sorry, son.
We had a sub-regional body, the West of England Partnership, which, you know, worked in some ways quite well. And we, across the four authorities, seemed to get on well, and we seemed to be able to deliver a certain amount of projects. What always eluded us was the strategic view, for instance, on transport, of an integrated transport authority. They didn't want that. Bristol wanted it, the other three didn't. But it's never going to work. You know, we've never had smart ticketing, really, because there's no real drive from the centre to bang the heads together of the bus companies and the rail companies and say, look, we need this, get on with it, do it. Until you have some kind of really driving force, that's not going to happen. The West of England Partnership will never produce it. We used every meeting. I used to say, what about smart ticketing?
oh, well, it's coming along. We're piloting something here. We're going to, you know, and it was just bollocks. They weren't.
I agree with the sense of collaboration and a self-enlightened view of, you know, what's good for us is good for others and vice versa. But Mark makes an critical point, which is that works fairly well at the vision, right, and at the strategy level, and we can all feel warm and cuddly that we're all going to be better off and no one really needs to give up anything. It's when you have to stick your pin in something rather than something else, in some part rather than some in your part, that I think then begins to see where the consensus, self-enlightenment, issues around, you know, we're all in this together, whether that holds. And my experience, others have different experience, my experience is that is the point where it begins to fracture. And when you particularly think about very contentious issues, you know, there are limits to a system that is not designed to reward, encourage those sorts of things. And I use this because I'm on a platform. There were lots of reasons why it didn't work. But it's a good illustration is the inability of the politicians in Greater Manchester who'd been collaborating brilliantly, spending other people's money brilliantly for 20 odd years to make a political decision as to whether they should introduce a congestion charge or not. They had to put a pin in and say, we are introducing a congestion charge and we recognise this will have distributional effects that play out differently. And the consensus broke. Okay. And that's when they began to be very serious about combined authorities and metro mayors, because they realised that they'd reached the limits of what they could do through consensus and collaboration. No, so I can go into much more detail on that, and I don't disagree with what you're saying. But there will be hard choices to be made. And constituency-based politicians find it very hard to make decisions where it doesn't directly benefit their constituency. As much as they would like it to be otherwise, that's the truth of it.
Well, thank you, Andrew. We have a question here from this gentleman. Yeah,
my name's Hugh Morris, and my comments or question is based on experience in a number of places, 15 years in London, 6 years in Bristol, 9 years in Manchester, and working with Sheffield City Region. In each of those places, looking at city regions, I think the issue for Wales is different from those places that I've worked in before for one important reason, which is that we have a UK government and we have a Welsh national government, and then we have city regions. What I found in the other places was that you needed to have a very powerful civic society in order to push forward those measures. What distinguished Manchester from Bristol was that in Manchester there was a very powerful professional and industry community which did a lot of the thinking and working out for Howard and for Richard and other key people who pushed forward the agenda at the city region. So it seems to me that those areas which are likely to be successful have to have that civic society and that organisation. The second thing is that you have to be clear about what it is different people are doing. And that's made more complicated now in Wales, because we have a UK industrial strategy with 10 pillars. 8 of those are shared responsibilities between UK government and Welsh government. Only one of those is fully devolved. It's not clear from the UK industrial strategy what part city regions play in that. So it would seem to me that if people want to move in the direction of having mayors and city regions in Wales, they need to, first of all, take stock of the civic societal bodies that are here that can do the thinking and the heavy lifting. And then there needs to be some conversation about who's going to do what. In Manchester, it took 20 years from the bomb in 1997 through a whole series of events and things that brought people together, from the Commonwealth Games through to TIFF and various other things, before it's got to a situation where it feels comfortable with a metro mayor. Along the route, lots of things didn't go right, but a lot of time was spent in developing the capacity and the capability to govern on a city regional footprint. And that is not evident in most city regions in Britain. I spend a lot of my time advising Sheffield. They don't have the capability. A lot of my time advising Birmingham, they don't have the capability. So you have to start with the end in mind, recognise it's going to take a long time, make sure you've got civic society, and make sure you've got the rules set out, whether it's through a combined authority or some other form of legislation, which sets out who's going to do what. So that's probably not a question,
yeah,
than an invitation to respond.
A long journey.
I'd like to come back on the civic society, because I mean I also chair a think tank as well, and one of the issues you've got is that you'll find that businesses and people are not willing to engage in the financial support of that to a large extent. So it's a real issue, and you see up in London, you know, it's often the cases of the big people up in London. For example, I approached BP and asked if they were interested in sponsoring any talks, and I just got the response, well, we already do a load in London. That's just it, you know. So it's those big companies that are not interested in coming outside of London and supporting it. So it's a big issue, I think, as you're aware, outside of London, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you.
Ashley Govier.
I'm Ashley Govier. I'm a councillor in Cardiff, and I was one of the ones that helped begin the sort of elected mayor for Cardiff. But I'm talking about on the regional level. You know, we talk about checks and balances, but as inconvenient as democracy sometimes is, I think that's the best checks and balances you can have. We may not always like the result, and politicians may not always like the result, but it is the best, I think, checks and balances you can have. And I agree with Andrew in many ways. I think we're going to get to a regional mayor here, but I think we've got to go down this path, because, you know, I was talking to somebody earlier that was surprised by this, but as a councillor in Cardiff and across the region, we have over 500 councillors make up at the moment the Cardiff Capital Region. And I know we've just signed this city deal and everybody thinks it's fantastic, but it is nowhere near the detail phase yet. And when we get to the detail phase, that's when it's gonna get really interesting, because the 10 that signed now, 9 Labour, 1 Conservative, in 8 weeks' time, the chances are they're gonna change, right? Yeah. And you're gonna see different priorities come from those. So does it stand the test of time? We're yet to see. I was cabinet member for environment in Cardiff, and I bear the scars on my back from pushing through the LDP, right, just in Cardiff. Now imagine doing a regional development plan under the current programme you have, where we all know houses should probably be built on the peripherals of Cardiff with the transport in, the transport back. But if I go and say that to Andrew Morgan, or I go and say that to Anthony Hunt, that I'm going to build on some of your greenfields because I've got to get transport into Cardiff now as well, it's just, you know, they will go from this collaborative view right back to their constituency view. And that's right, they do that in a way, because I'm elected by Grangetown. My number one priority is Grangetown, then Cardiff, then the region, because legally that's my responsibility. Mm. If Cardiff residents found out that I'm going to go and spend £50 million of their money on some housing estate in Torvine, I don't expect to be there long, to be honest. because that's the reality, and I think that's what we're going to face when we get to this situation as time goes by. I do not think this will stand the test of time. And in terms of the Cardiff one, to bring that back down, I know we're on different subjects. In Cardiff, we did achieve over 11,000 votes. We would have hit the English referendum target. But it's not a simple case for petition. Any councillor can get petitions signed. We can get thousands of signatures on a petition, on an online petition. But you're not allowed to do that when it comes to the elected mayor referendum. So we had 11,000. And generally, it wasn't the fact that people were definitely for it, but they weren't even against it. They were kind of indifferent, really. They'll sign the petition. And if we had the numbers on the streets, we'd have probably got the 24,000 without much issue. There wasn't a groundswell of support to leave the EU. You know, there wasn't petitions, there wasn't people saying on the doorstep, we want to leave it. When it came to it, they wanted to leave. So I think if you carry on ignoring these issues and not at least asking the people, which is what I wanted, I wanted Welsh Government or Cardiff Council to at least ask the people, let's give them the choice, because we're doing so much to them. And now on the city deal, it's full of risk, the city deal. And we haven't yet asked the people whether they want us to do that. And my view is we must ask the people at times what they want and not just have a conversation between politicians and academics, assuming we know what they want, because we know where that gets us.
Well, thank you, Ashley. The difficulty is about, you know, thinking about your local constituents within a regional dimension, that conflict, that pull. And this long journey, I mean, civic society, I don't know where Welsh Business stands on this. I do talk to them often. I don't think a fully functioning city region with statutory powers necessary ranks up there, maybe business rates, but...
I mean, in talking about the, you know, your responsibility to your individual area, and then if you're in a region, your responsibility to the rest of the region, I mean, that is the sort of model that happens now with Welsh Government, that if you're in the Welsh Government, you can't go in and make decisions that will benefit your own area. I mean, that's specifically... you have to step back from those sort of decisions, and you do have to make decisions for the whole of Wales, and people are able to do it. So I think it's, you know, I think of being pessimistic, actually, really, that it's not going to be possible for people to work together
that's
and make
job.
Make those.
Make job for Wales. My job is for Cardiff, but not for Torbay.
Yes, but if your job is for the city region,
but
because you're on that cabinet that is for the city region, where you are there to work together, to work collaboratively, I mean, I think it is possible to do that. And we have got examples in the way that all politics works, that you don't always work in the interests of your area. You know, you work for the interests perhaps for some people who are more in need than people in your own area. I mean, that is a common pattern of working, and I think it is possible to do that. But I don't deny it's going to be difficult, and certainly we haven't got to those difficult bits yet. And the other important point, of course, is that we have got the May election, and there may be a whole range of different people there. And obviously a lot of this has been built up through trust to the individual leaders who are actually there at the moment.
Yeah.
And so we've got to have something that will you know, manage the vagaries of an electoral system as well.
Okay. Well, as someone who's from Grangetown originally, I want to see a prosperous Cardiff Capital Region. So for people in Torbay and Ebbw Vale, it serves the region's benefit to do well in terms of increased business rates, economic activity, reduced benefits. But
it won't be on any manifesto that's run by any party in Cardiff Council will not have "we pledge to make Torbay and Ebbw Vale better off."
maybe not explicitly, but yeah. Okay, are there any more questions? There's a gentleman at the back there.
John Richards. I think the most important point made here this evening was made by Professor Deacon, and that is, if we go back into history of our local government, I don't think it's true that local councillors have to be parochial. Look, for example, at our reservoirs. We are fed by reservoirs here in Cardiff that were built at the behest of Victorian and Edwardian councillors who were thinking regionally. They built reservoirs up in Brecon. Cardiff took the lead in that. And in doing so, they built reservoirs over capacity for the needs in those days, because they were taking the long-term view and they were taking the regional view. And I think we need to ask ourselves a more fundamental question here this evening. Elected mayors, metro mayors, I don't think they're the answer. I think we need to be asking ourselves the bigger question of how do we get people with that sort of long-term vision, that sort of regional vision, standing once again for local government positions. And I think part of the problem that we have, and no disrespect to the councillors that are with us tonight and others who are personal friends of mine who are standing in these elections, we don't have the best people in our communities and in our business communities putting themselves forward as a matter of course for local government office. I think part of the problem is this leader and cabinet structure has devalued the role of the individual ward councillor. But I would like to ask the panel, if you agree with me that elected mayors and metro mayors are not the answer to this problem, what is the answer? How do we get people with regional vision and long-term vision back into local government office?
Russell, do you want to take that question?
Well, the historic example of the time is that they used to appoint what they called aldermen. So the aldermen were kind of like members of the House of Lords are now, so they were appointed to council office. They had council position for a limited number of years. The councillors themselves were able to do it on a kind of pro rata party basis, and they appointed often business people into those aldermen's positions. So for example, the Marquess of Bute was put in as you know, one of those positions. He was also made the Lord Mayor. So they appointed him for that period. Well, since then, of course, we've gone against, apart from the House of Lords, we've gone against, you know, appointing people to, you know, political office directly like that. But that's the way they got round it then, from that aldermanic thing. And they knew it was a temporary position, and they came in and they added their expertise then. But they were given the same kind of rights as councillors, including voting rights, but there were a limited number of them.
And who wants to dirty their hands with politics? Do you want to go knocking on doors? Do you want to go and deliver leaflets? No. The hours are antisocial. The pay is appalling. I mean, what, you know, why would you want to do it?
Lots of reasons.
Well, should we pay our electorate?
I agree, but you know, most people would rather go to the pub or sit at home and watch the telly, frankly.
Yeah.
So,
And one of the ways of answering some of those questions are put forward in the local government paper, which in fact gives the power to local authorities to get rid of the cabinet system if they want to, allows local authorities to choose a proportional voting system if they want to. That is all proposed in this white consultative paper. And yeah. I don't know whether that might, you know, might address some of those issues of revaluing the local councillor.
Thank you. A very good question. Are there any more questions? Do you want to? Oh, this one here. This one. No, Mark, you've asked the question. You can have another.
I don't need that. Mine's just an observation.
Yeah.
I went to a function in Swansea where they were debating Swansea Bay region.
Yeah.
And one of the gentlemen there asked a question. It was such a small place. Why would they need a Bay region? Why didn't they link with Cardiff? Why didn't Cardiff link with Newport and the rest of Wales and form a government that works?
Yeah.
Well, because the obvious answer there is because actually when you look at the geography of everyday life, there aren't that many connections, despite what people are talking about. There aren't very many direct relationships on the everyday life between Swansea and Cardiff. That's why. So when you're thinking about the services and the issues that matter to the everyday life, you would think about them separately because they function somewhat separately. They have their own sphere of influences. They do. You can look at their travel to work data. I'll send it to you. Or look at the city region analysis for Elizabeth Hayward's work. It clearly proves the point. And when you're thinking, this is the combination of political geography and economic geography over those sorts of things that make a difference to the success or otherwise of city economies. And transport, housing, land use planning are some of those important factors. They all seem to me to be somewhat political in nature. And to have a suggestion that you have non-elected individuals making those decisions in a technocratic, enlightened way seems to be somewhat strange. I would prefer a directly elected way where at least you can vote them out if you don't like them, which seems to me the best way of getting rid of underperforming individuals. And your answer, sir, you know, in terms of how do you get those individuals with strategic vision that can see through their plans, we give them 5 or 4 year terms where they're not beholden to their council colleagues who are constantly kind of worrying about whether they can get them out and get themselves in, instead constantly worrying about whether they've got, you know, the votes of their particular political party to bear. That seems to me to be the anathema of trying to get strategic vision in and perspective that our cities up and down the country need. So the answer to your particular question is directly elected mayors at the metro level.
Sorry, it's a gentleman here. Sorry.
I'm Hugh Williams. An observation, really. I think looking at the white paper that is currently out for consultation and other legislation that's been passed, notably the Planning Wales Act, I get the feeling that whether the public in Wales realise it or not, we're about to be subjected to an interesting experiment in the development of local government. And I think one of the consequences might be a craving for the sort of benign dictator solution that was mentioned at the start, because I think two things are going to potentially unfold. First of all, we have the strategic planning level, which was brought in by the Planning Wales Act, and I had some slight hand in some of the reports on that. And that was clearly designed to get local authorities within these strategic areas to work together to take these what we call larger than local decisions. So I think those strategic planning panels are going to be a critical test of the ability of local politicians to actually think on a regional, sub-regional basis. And we've got the first plans coming out 2020-21, so I think it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. And the second thing, I think, is the white paper's proposal for the enhanced joint committee structure, which I can see where it's come from, although when I was a local government lawyer, joint committees were regarded as being a very unpopular solution because of the sort of way they removed politicians from the direct control of their individual parties in the in the local authorities. And I see the danger with these enhanced joint committees, that in order to become effective, they are going to require to have corporate status. They are going to begin to try and suck up more powers. And eventually, the same inherent contradiction is going to arise, that electors locally are going to have issues. They're going to go to their local city, county, district councillors to be told, oh, this is being dealt with at the joint committee level. And suddenly, the democratic deficit becomes apparent, and you then have to face the problem of how do you plug that? Do you go back to what we've got now, or do you confront the fact that you've then got to give the regional level some degree of legitimate democratic accountability? Mm-hmm. And you result in one of two solutions. One, you go to directly elected mayors, or you end up with some sort of regional authority that looks suspiciously like the metropolitan county councils that were done away with in the early years of Mrs. Thatcher's government. So that's my observation on where we are now.
Thank you.
The wheel turns. There are people at the back.
Yes, I know. Some questions at the back. One more question. So there's a gentleman patiently waiting at the back.
My name is David Fitzpatrick. Until June of last year, I lived in Hong Kong for 36 years. For 14 of those years, I was a senior civil servant. The point I would like to make is this, that we all dream of a more successful Wales. And it's obvious that a successful Wales will have at its heart, not that it's the only ingredient, a very successful Cardiff. I worked for a very successful Hong Kong government because it had big league civil service. It's not that the civil servants took over, it was that the civil servants were able to develop policies which were realistic, well thought through, and then offered to the politicos to take forward. Is that possibly where we're missing here? The gentleman earlier properly described where were the people who were going into to serve the public. I'm not in any way knocking the political people. They'll carry the responsibility with the electorate. But if you can find the solutions for a better tomorrow from Wales, surely it will be from plans which have been developed in great part from a really good, highly professional civil service. Is that really what we're missing? That the government of Wales is not giving sufficient brief to powerful civil servants to develop a plan for a better tomorrow?
Is that an issue for Wales? The quality of the civil service? Maybe looking at underperforming political class look good.
We used to call them the fifth party.
Yeah.
I think one of the issues in the civil, I was a civil servant myself when I started off, is that there's a big tradition of generalism within the civil service, and that if you developed any expertise, certainly when I was there, it was a disadvantage to you. So you never kind of got the expertise that that you'd require in order to develop things. And the other thing is, because Wales is, you know, a relatively small nation, it's not able to build up the size of the civil service support that you obviously do for English departments. I don't know to the extent, well, Julia probably know more, whether expertise has been encouraged more in the civil service, or it's still as generalism?
I think it's encouraged more now than it was, but certainly the generalism, I think, is very very poor myself to have a generalist approach.
Do you want to mention anything about the civil service?
On the civil service, a very senior civil servant once told me, Mark, you have to understand, our job is to do the wrong thing in the best way we possibly can.
Yes. I think we've run out of time. I want to thank you all for attending, which I think you hope was a stimulating debate on elected mayors for Wales and some of the bigger issues around how we move to a fully functioning city region. I'd like to thank my panelists. I beg your pardon. I'm overdoing my brief. So
no, you're all right. Just very briefly, because I'm conscious that I'm between you and a glass of wine. But first of all, I think properly to thank the panel and to thank Sean. I'm the Director of Communications and Marketing at Cardiff University, and we're delighted to sponsor this event with the IWA. So first of all, could everyone show a round of appreciation for the panel? I'd also like to thank you, the audience, for such enlightened questions. There are some real concrete examples of some of the difficulties that these the structures face, and some of the answers here, which are enlightening. And I think that we saw the real tension in some of the debate, which was great. The university is very keen to sponsor events where evidence-based events where these issues can be properly debated. And I hope very much you'll keep an eye on the future events, which we're hoping to plan with the IWA. So thank you.